Every daring attempt to make a great change in existing conditions, every lofty vision of new possibilities for the human race, has been labeled utopian. The woman who originally said these words is our subject this week on From the Vault, the Pacifica Radio Archive's weekly program that brings our history out of the vault and onto the radio. And who is the speaker of those words? Emma Goldman, quite possibly the most famous anarchist this country has ever produced. Hi, I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, sitting in as host this week on From the Vault for Brian DeShazer, who's away. We're using as the foundation for this week's program, The Courage to Struggle, a wonderful documentary produced by Tish Valva in 1991.
Emma Goldman was asked, "When did you become an anarchist, and what made you one?" She smiled and slowly smoothed her book upon her knee. "We are all egotists," she answered. "I am an anarchist because I am an egotist. It pains me to see others suffer. I cannot bear it. So, because what others suffer makes me suffer, I am an anarchist and give my life to the cause, for only through it can be ended all suffering and want and unhappiness." Emma Goldman was born in June 1869 in the Jewish quarter of Kovna, a small city in what is now Lithuania. She experienced a tumultuous childhood. Her father's failures in business, the early death of his oldest son, and growing anti-Semitism in Russia caused the family to move frequently. Her father was prone to violent fits of anger and often took them out on Emma. At an early age, Emma knew she had to escape the turmoil of her family life. While living with her family in St. Petersburg, she experienced some of the excitement of the early revolution, the nihilists, and the early fights against the Tsar. She was excited by the political life of St. Petersburg, but she was destined to a marriage arranged by her father. At the age of 16, she and her sister decided to opt instead for the promise of America. Candace Falk has spent the last 15 years working on Goldman's history. She is the author of Love, Anarchy, and Emma Goldman, a biography, and is the editor and director of the Emma Goldman Papers.
She and her sister, Helena, left on board a ship, the Gellert, to go to the United States. They landed in New York and went up to Rochester, where she had another sister. And in Rochester, she experienced something that surprised her, which was that the factory life that she had known very well in Russia at the time, what she found so oppressive, was actually less oppressive than what she met in Rochester. In Rochester, she found that she worked in factories that were very repressive in terms of the workers couldn't sing while they worked, they couldn't talk with each other. And all the hopes that she thought that she would find, all the freedom that she looked forward to, was blocked by the struggle for economic survival and by class differences that were even apparent among the Jewish community, where she had been running away from anti-Semitism in Russia. Here she found a different kind of oppression even within her own community. She was attracted to a young garment worker who also seemed to love to travel and have an interest in having a life outside of the immigrant community, and married him, and was very disappointed in that marriage because he really couldn't meet her as an equal. Well, as it comes when you read somebody's autobiography and work with their letters so much, you know so much about them, including that their sexual life was really not commensurate to what she had hoped for, and according to Emma, he was impotent and very humiliated by it, and tended to lose himself in gambling and card playing, and that life seemed so barren to her that eventually she left him. And leaving somebody at that time was a very shocking thing, to have a divorce in an immigrant community. And her own analysis of why she left him was that she started to hear the voices of the freedom fighters around her, who were willing to sacrifice anything for freedom and for a vision of a world that was better than the one that they lived in.
Meanwhile, laborers in Chicago rallied for an 8-hour workday. On the fourth day of a general strike in 1886, a bomb exploded in Haymarket Square, killing one policeman and injuring many citizens. 8 of the demonstrators were arrested and 7 were hanged for the death. It was clear, however, that they were really tried for their political beliefs. This incident gave Emma the impetus she needed to move to New York and dedicate her life to fighting for freedom. She lived cooperatively with friends and soon became well known as a lecturer.
She spoke at a time when it was very common for people to go out almost every night to lectures to hear what people had to say. And so she began her political career speaking to different audiences. And then eventually she had her own magazine called Mother Earth Magazine, which was a forum for political and social issues of the day. It began in 1906 and went to 1917.
At that point, a period of repression swept the nation. The government made an attempt to crush the anti-militarism movement. It also tried to crush the IWW and other labor movements and activities. The post office suppressed Mother Earth magazine by blocking its mailing privileges. Free speech advocates on the staff quickly published a new magazine called the Mother Earth Bulletin, but it was suppressed. Next, showing great ingenuity, they published a journal called Instead of a Magazine, and it too was banned. Hundreds of magazines were suppressed in this manner. For Goldman, these magazines, combined with her lecture tours, served as vehicles to speak to people about the 8-hour workday, freedom of expression, birth control, the modern drama, about open education, conscription, women's rights as equals both in the labor movement and at home, about prostitution, and about many international movements for freedom.
Many times when she was about to speak in a town, the landlord would be threatened by the police, saying, if you allow Emma Goldman to speak in your hall, you will lose your license. They were threatened, and very often she would come to a hall and there would be a lock on the door. And although Goldman's ideas were quite ahead of her time, she still was the kind of person who looked straight into the fire and spoke the truth about what was happening and was willing to challenge the existing status quo. And people wanted to support her right to do that. And so very often, whether people agreed with her or not, they would form free speech clubs to say, well, I may not believe with him of Emma Goldman's opinion on free love and against marriage, but she has a right to speak her mind. So now, when you look back at Goldman's talks and the kind of public life that she led, what's very important to see is that both her ideas were compelling, and also the fact that there was a political struggle around her ability to express her ideas that left a lasting effect on American history, because certainly the early struggles for freedom of speech in this country were based on women like Emma Goldman, and particularly people who were marginalized or more victimized as anarchists who were easier targets for government and police repression.
Anarchism has no set rules, but there is one principle it teaches which is fundamental, and that is the imperative duty of direct action on the individual. For instance, take the matter of 80-cent gas. When the collector comes with his bill made out at the $1 rate, pay him only 80 cents, and if he protests, politely throw him downstairs. If all of you did that, the gas company would soon come to the conclusion that 80 cents is all it can expect. The real trouble is that you think you cannot get along without the gas company, when the fact is the gas company cannot get along without you.
Roger Baldwin, who was one of the founders of the American Civil Liberties Union, says that he owes his entire inspiration to Emma Goldman, who had the courage to speak out and really reminded him that the key issue was the issue of liberation from coercion.
In an interview with Marsha Mint Dinab in 1973, Roger Baldwin reflected on Emma's lectures.
When she did speak, whether it was a small group or a large one, she was so positive and so sure of herself and reasonable, always very reasonable, and sometimes humorous. She was what you call hard-hitting. Mm-hmm. And she held attention of her audience all the time because of that. You never knew quite what was coming next. She wouldn't put anybody to sleep. She was very quiet on the platform, but very positive. And she didn't raise her voice. She didn't shout. She didn't use any gestures. She just talked very simply, very positively, and very coherently. She went right along. She was a good speaker, not a great orator. She was a very convincing speaker, too.
Free speech means either the unlimited right of expression or nothing at all. The moment any man or set of men can limit speech, it is no longer free. Let all reformers and radicals realize, once and for all, that to love liberty means to become lawless, since freedom and law can never harmonize.
Emma's earliest talks were directed at the immigrant community in the Northeast. Soon she had followers in all strata of society. Her lectures on the modern drama were quite popular among the middle class. She was very interested in the way the characters interacted and how these interactions dramatized the principles of freedom. She cited Ibsen and Strindberg and used the modern drama as a vehicle to bring her personal and public life principles together. Many years before, Emma addressed a crowd of the unemployed in New York City's Union Square.
Demonstrate before the palaces of the rich. Demand work. If they do not give you work, demand bread. If they deny you both, take bread. It is your sacred right.
For these words, she was arrested, convicted, and sentenced to a year's imprisonment on Blackwell's Island. When she had completed her sentence, she attended a meeting arranged to celebrate her release.
The New York World reported in its lurid prose that Goldman entered from the left wings and strutted to the front center of the stage. There, dressed in simple black, save for a red ribbon at her neck, she stood with head thrown back and glared up at the roof with her peculiar half-closed eyes. Friends and comrades, I have come back to you after having served 10 months in prison for talking, she proclaimed. If the representatives of your government intend to prosecute women for talking, they will have to begin with their mothers, wives, sisters, and sweethearts, for they will never stop women from talking. But it was not Emma Goldman who was prosecuted. It was the thoughts of Emma Goldman, the principles of anarchy that were prosecuted. It was the right of free speech that was prosecuted. The authorities are afraid of those who try to open the eyes of the people to their sufferings.
Goldman was frequently arrested for speaking her beliefs. In 1916, she was jailed for publicly advocating birth control. She was not afraid to speak directly and forthrightly.
From whatever angle the question of birth control may be considered, it is the most dominant issue of modern times. And as such, it cannot be driven back by persecution, imprisonment, or a conspiracy of silence. Every woman should have the right to say whether she shall have a child or not. Motherhood should be a voluntary act, not the act of a slave.
Emma identified herself as a single woman. She did not believe in marriage or monogamy. In her later years, when Emma had moved to Canada, she lived with the Ladin family in Toronto. Ora Ladin Robbins was 18 at the time and recalls how Emma's views made an impact in her house.
My mother was a marvelous Russian cook, and Emma loved to eat. She enjoyed liquor, and she enjoyed company. She didn't have too much patience with people who didn't agree with her, and She and my mother got along very well. My mother so admired her and worked very hard to raise money for her. The only thing that she didn't adhere to or didn't particularly care for was Emma's thoughts on free love. She thought that might be rather a bad influence for me.
Once in Detroit, Goldman was invited to speak at a union meeting.
Members and friends of Local 127 of the Automobile Aircraft and Vehicle Workers of America, it's a pleasure to be asked to present our speaker this evening. I was going to say that money talks, and we have certainly spoken eloquently tonight. And I suppose that because she is such a good talker, and because she speaks so eloquently, that the first syllable of her name is gold. And because she speaks so vehemently, because she speaks with such authority, the last part of her name is man. I want to introduce Emma Goldman.
Friends, by the introduction of our good chairman, I can see that he is a man. The conceit of the male that when you think deeply and express yourself with intensity, you must be manly and not womanly. I want to tell him that I know any amount of men who neither think nor express themselves in any shape or form. I know that it takes an American man a long time to wake up. But once he wakes up, he is a fighter, and nothing can stop him from fighting for what he considers right.
After a very active period of speaking in the United States, in which she took six-month tours every year to speak on a variety of subjects, the ones that reached the largest audiences were, of course, the birth control talks of 1915 and 16, and then in 1917, her work against the involuntary conscription of men into the military. And that was so threatening. And the numbers of people who showed for her lectures so extraordinarily large that she was arrested under this kind of war measures repression, a kind of a treasonous act to speak out against the draft. And we even have a government document at the Emma Goldman Papers from Attorney General Caffey in 1917 that says, Emma Goldman is an extremely persuasive woman with persuasive powers so strong as to make her dangerous. She was imprisoned for 18 months, and during that time, the government, particularly J. Edgar Hoover, managed to invalidate her citizenship and get her deported with 249 other radicals, mostly immigrant radicals, and put on a ship, the first ship of deportees, to go back to Russia in 1919.
The young J. Edgar Hoover, before he became the director of the FBI, stood on the docks at 4 o'clock in the morning to watch her boat leave. In her last act of defiance before being deported, it is said that Emma Goldman thumbed her nose at Hoover as the ship sailed away. Goldman had been inspired by the participation of the Russian people in the 1917 revolution there. Although she was looking forward to the promise of this revolution, what she found when she got there were the seeds of suppression, the suppression of dissent, and particularly the suppression of the anarchists. She met with Lenin to bring questions that she had, but she felt disregarded and quite concerned about the future there. After only 2 years, she decided to leave Russia and to write about her experiences and alert the world that, although the dream was still alive, the reality was not.
Was this the revolution I had believed in all my life, yearned for and strove to interest others in? Or was it a caricature, a hideous monster which had come to jeer and mock me? I was no longer deceived by their mask, but my real problem lay much deeper. It was the revolution itself. Its manifestations were so completely at variance with what I had conceived and propagated as revolution that I did not know anymore which was right.
Many of her followers were shocked by her outspoken critique.
There's a description of a talk that she gave in England by Bertrand Russell, in which he says that she came into a room to speak in London. Everyone in the audience stood up and applauded madly for this great heroine and the honor of being in her presence. And then when she spoke critically of the Soviet Union, you could have heard a pin drop after her talk. No one applauded, no one booed, everyone just sat in utter silence. And I think that that was like a metaphor for some of the experiences that she had after she left the Soviet Union.
Goldman decided to write a book. She called it My 2 Years in Russia, but her publisher renamed it My Disillusionment in Russia.
She was quite angry because Goldman, the great visionary, believed that she was never really disillusioned. She then went on to write her own autobiography in the south of France called Living My Life, which is still a tremendous work of literary and political grace and intelligence, and gives you some of the pulsating feeling of what her day-to-day life was and the people who were in it. And of course, there was this kind of poignance to her writing it as an exile, as a woman who could never be that active again.
After leaving Russia, Emma moved around Europe. She wrote that she was a lonely exile and was sad that she could no longer live as lively and as active a life as she had in the United States. In 1934, President Roosevelt allowed her back into the U.S. for a 90-day lecture tour.
Even Eleanor Roosevelt allowed her into the country, and we have a letter at the Emma Goldman Papers that is rather comical, in which someone writes to the government and says, how could you allow that woman back into the country? And Eleanor Roosevelt says, I think the country can handle her. She's a very old woman now, and I think the country can handle her for 90 days. Goldman was not supposed to speak about anything directly political on that 90-day speaking tour except drama. And of course, in her true style, she spoke about the drama of the rise of fascism and Nazism and was really received quite well. But the poignancy of it again was that she couldn't return to the country where her closest comrades were and where the real base of her political work was. Although by this time she was certainly an international figure, she still longed for the America of her youth.
She continued her political activities as best as she could. She was quite active in the Spanish Civil War in 1936, visiting the front several times, risking her life. Working from her post in England, she became the English language propagandist for the CNTFAI, the Anarchist Labor Organization.
They are fighting on because they are the only people in the world who still love liberty passionately enough to be willing to die for it. I should not have believed such a thing possible had I not seen with my own eyes the epic greatness of the Spanish people. Whatever the outcome of the unequal struggle, the contribution they have already made to the greatness of the human spirit will not be daunted, can never die, and never be lost. My work for my Spanish comrades, while bringing but meager results for them, has meant the greatest experience of my public life.
At the end of her life, while living in Canada, Emma raised funds for the Spanish women and children refugees of the war. She continued to write and to support anarchists and other political and literary figures, such as Helen Keller, Paul Robeson, Aldous Huxley, and Albert Einstein. But Emma's brief visit to the U.S. and her activities in Spain did little to alleviate the instability of a life of exile.
It is only now, when most of my friends have gone by the board, and when I myself feel so cast out, pursued by the Furies and nowhere at home, that the love of the few friends I have left has begun to stand out more beautifully than before.
In 1940, while living in Toronto, Emma Goldman suffered a stroke. Goldman had been banished from living in the U.S. for 2 decades. Ironically, her body was finally allowed to return after her death.
Emma Goldman died on May 14, 1940. At the funeral services for Emma Goldman, Harry Weinberger spoke. For more than 30 years, I have known Emma Goldman as her lawyer and her friend. Never in all those 30 years have I known her except as a battler for freedom and justice. She was tireless, she was fearless, she never compromised. Liberty was always her theme, liberty was always her dream, liberty was always her goal. In a world of marching feet and tremendous battles, one marcher is missing. One warrior for freedom will struggle no more. Emma Goldman is gone, gone to join that army of men and women of the past to whom liberty was more important than life itself. She spoke out in this country against war and conscription and went to jail. She spoke out for political prisoners and was deported. She spoke out in Russia against the despotism of communism and again became a fugitive on the face of the earth. She spoke out against Nazism and the combination of Nazism and communism, and there was hardly a place where she could live. Emma Goldman, we welcome you back to America, where you wanted to end your days with friends and comrades. We had hoped to welcome you back in life. You will live forever in the hearts of your friends, and the story of your life will live as long as the stories are told of women and men of courage and idealism.
Emma Goldman devoted her life to struggling for women's rights and for workers' rights. It's important not to immortalize her as we celebrate her life, but to join in her spirit as a woman, an anarchist, and a fighter in the struggle for freedom. Goldman's papers were read by writers and activists Judy Berry, Gina Sole, Sarah Crome, Candace Falk, Joanne Lewis, Leon Litwack, Judy Shattuck, Michelle Schacht, Laura Wide, Kay Kaiser, and Sarah Vogan.
That does it for another week of From the Vault Remixed. From the Vault is a weekly series produced, written, and edited by Christopher Sprinkle and executive produced by the Pacifica Radio Archives and Brian DeShazer. From the Vault is presented as part of the Pacifica Radio Archives Preservation and Access Project, which is supported in part by an award from the National Endowment for the Arts and grants from the Grammy Foundation, the Ford Foundation, University of California Berkeley's Moffitt Library, the Pacifica Foundation, and from contributions from Pacifica Station listeners. This week's episode was produced by Christopher Sprinkle. The Courage to Struggle was written and produced by Tish Valva. Our theme music is by Kevin Drum Holiday. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. Thanks for listening.